Next Step number 439, November 3rd, 2016. Hey, election day is coming up in a couple days. But there's all kinds of politics. Politics you may see inside of the church, outside of the church. We'll be talking about that as well as politics, well, the ones you know. This is Father Voskin. I'm connecting the dots between the spiritual, the emotional, the psychological, and the physical. And I invite you to do it with me. Join me right now as we take the next step.
This is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The Next Steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
So they say that he was serving on the altar. You've heard it. I've heard it. He's serving on the altar. That's rude, isn't it? It's outright disrespectful. I mean, you've heard it. He's serving on the altar. It's a pet peeve of mine, I know. You can't serve on the altar. It's rude. It means you're standing there. You're on top of the altar. You're on the altar. No, you're at the altar. But we refer to the service in the church, to whether it's the priest or the deacon, he is serving on the altar. No, he is serving at the altar. Now you say, that's such a small little thing. And look at all the things you got to talk about. What do you care about this small little word? Well, guess what? Your phone thinks about those words. Yesterday, I'm sitting and a priest texts me. And I have learned how to use this text, which I do not like because it's just too instantaneous. But I have learned how to use it. And you use the microphone function, right? So I wrote him back. I texted back. I recorded back. Let's say it that way, right? I recorded back. And at the end of it, I guess as a gesture to myself, I go, Verch. Verch means end. And I hit the send button. Little did I know that that little cell phone was going to autocorrect my Verch, my end. And it was embarrassing, I have to tell you. Little words, but they make a big difference. And so I'm starting off today's show by sharing that pet peeve with you, okay? You do not stand on the altar. You stand at the altar. All right, you got that? Everybody who pastes pictures up on Facebook, on Instagram, this is my son, this is my grandson, serving on the altar. No, you're not serving on the altar. You're serving at the altar. And how do you do? It's good to have you with us today. That's all I'll talk about that. We have so much more to talk about, including an election coming up here in this country. And you tell me, you say that, well, why are you talking about election and politics inside this spirituality podcast? Hey, do you know what my degree is in? Yeah, guess what? I have a degree. Yeah, you wouldn't know it, right? I do have a degree from the University of Southern California. My master's degree and my thesis was in a department called social ethics. Now, you talk about social ethics and you talk about what's going on in the world, I should have like the biggest, highest paying job around, right? To commentary on social ethics, what's going on in the world. Well, that's coming up in a few minutes. I'll use the second portion of today's show to talk about that. I want to kick off with some of the things that are going on around us. I had a great time at St. James Armenian Church in Los Angeles.
I'm going back to the ones that I know, with whom I can be what I want to be. Just 1 week for the feeling to go, and with you there to help me, then it probably will.
Going back to the ones you adore. Going back to where it all started. Going back to your roots. Going back home. It's an interesting idea, isn't it? You don't know what to expect. Well, you do in your mind, and that's what makes it intriguing, in fact, even phenomenal, right? There's a phenomena to going back home because you have expectations. Your memories of home were something, it was part of time past. And of course, you've amplified those memories because of what you've lived through. And it's always sweeter back then for some reason. At least it should be, or for many people, maybe I guess it isn't. But at least for me, there's a sweetness to going back home. So this past Sunday, we were at the St. James Armenian Church. That was my home parish. It was where I grew up and actually where I took my holy vows for the priesthood. And I was ordained at St. James in 1982. I served there in the church. But even deeper than that, there's some really interesting roots to that entire community. St. James was the offshoot of the first Armenian church in the Los Angeles area. The first one was called Holy Cross. And because of Armenian infighting and politics, guess what? Takeovers! Yeah, back in the 30s and the 40s, 50s especially, 1950s, that's when it happened in Los Angeles, and takeovers and splits within the Armenian church. And this plays into what we're going to be talking about in a few minutes, so let me just start off over here, because I remember it specifically. I wasn't around it. I was born in the 50s, but I do remember in the 60s when the St. James Church had just started. They had a church on Adams Street, and they were trying to sell this church. Beautiful, beautiful church. And by the way, it's still there. It's still there in Los Angeles. They sold it back in the 60s, and they moved the entire congregation to another location. But the Armenian church there, and that's a completely other story, which I'll share with you sometime, but I've been to that church. It was sold to an African-American congregation. They took out the Armenian altar, but everything else remains inside that church. And so you have the platform, the altar. You are really serving at the altar area, which is now a bandstand. But all the Armenian stained glasses, the frescoes, the Armenian writing, it is still there. And I've been there and spoken to some of the people in the congregation, and they all recognize that as a very sacred place. So maybe about 10 miles from that location, they started a church. And I do remember it because as a child, I remember my grandfather was adamant. He was a member of that church, and he just did not want to sell this property. But again, politics got involved, and they sold the property. They went on to another church. And the St. James Church in Los Angeles has a life. It was the stab. I guess the new one was started off in the late 1960s. I do remember the day it was consecrated. It was in 1972, because of the day that I received my stole, becoming a stole bearer in the process of moving up and becoming a priest. So 1972, let's see, what was that? I was 16 years old. Yeah. Stole bearer. That's what they call it. It's in between like a subdeacon and a deacon. Or somewhere along, in between an acolyte and a subdeacon. How about that, okay? So, anyway, we moved to the new location, and it's there that I have such fond memories growing up, and youth groups and opportunities to serve at the altar, not on the altar. We served at the altar. And later on, it's there that I became a priest. I was ordained in front of that altar. So going back, I hadn't been there for several years. I had gone, unfortunately, for reasons because of funerals, had to attend certain people's funerals throughout the past. But this time, Father Hartun Tashjian, the new pastor of that church, invited me to come and offer the sermon last Sunday. So we went in Mass. I went with Susan and a small group of us from the Glendale area, decided to go along for the ride. We got a chance to visit with the people there and share in the liturgy. It was just beautiful, beautiful choir. But also the memories. And here's what's interesting fact about it, is the interesting idea is that I had certain memories from childhood. But what about the people? This was really wild. I saw people that were kids when I was like a young adult. Okay, let's say 21, 22, 25. I left there when I was 25 years old. Okay. And these people were like little kids. They were like 10 years old back then. Well, guess what? 40 years later, 34, 35 years later, these 10-year-olds are now 45. They're 50 years old, you know? And I'm seeing them, and in your head, you start thinking about these little kids. And you realize that they are now, they've arrived. They're in administrative positions. They have the life of their own. They have their children. They have their grandchildren. One guy came up to me and he asked how my sons are doing. He says, well, I became a grandfather yesterday, and this was one of my students. And so it kind of like ages you very quickly. You kind of understand where life takes you, right? It's a quick process. But aside from the nostalgia, there was an opportunity really to think about where we're headed as a community, where we're headed as a faith-based community. And you also see at that moment that a lot of things do not change. Yes, the exterior has changed. You know, it's like slapping a new coat of paint on it. It's like what Jesus talks about when he says the whitewashed sepulchres, right? On the outside, they're beautiful, but inside, they are rotting bones. And there is a danger in long or old communities of falling into this trap. Now, this particular parish I had gone to, it was very refreshing because there was a new group of people there. There was a new group of people that were answering the call. And the new pastor there, Father Hartun, had rallied his troops, so to speak, having a group of people around him that were there as a community, as a Christian-based community. But what happens is when you go back to a lot of these places, it does give you an opportunity to reflect on what is the nature, because you have matured, you have grown up, your age has gone up chronologically, and so it's a time for reflection, like it or not, because you can compare where we were and where we are today. So I had these thoughts when I was at St. James. They had a lot of beautiful thoughts about those times there, but I also had thoughts about what happened to that community that broke off, that had those tragedies in there. And this goes back to the 1930s. This is now, you got to remember, this is about 10 years after, 15 years after the Armenian Genocide. Definitely about 10 years after the Armenian Genocide had finished. And an archbishop of the Armenian Church was assassinated in New York for comments he had made against the Armenian political parties, and specifically against the Armenian flag, the tricolor. And what happened is it caused a division that was probably there, but it became more pronounced. It caused a division. It was the starting point of the division. There is a book, I think it's called Murder at the Altar by Terry Phillips, a good friend of mine from ages ago. I will put a link on today's show notes. I believe that book is still in print. I would suggest that you get a chance to look at it, and it gives you some of the background of what's good. And he's written it in such a nice way. He compares it with what he's going through right now. So it's an interesting little play how he presents it. But do check that out. And as Susie's pointing out, as a librarian should, right? He uses the word correctly. Murder at the altar, not on the altar. Murder at the altar. Because this archbishop was assassinated right in the church. I've been to that church, Holy Cross, in New York. Now, later on, fast forward a couple decades, and it was in the 50s when you had infighting among Armenians, the Armenian political parties, and it had ramifications in church life. And so you had these splits, and particularly in Los Angeles, the Holy Cross Church, which was the first church, the Holy Cross Church, Surpach, was separated into two, and so began the St. James Church. In Fresno area, the Holy Trinity Church was taken over, and so on. In many, many communities back east and here in America, this became the turmoil of the mid-century for Armenian politics to get involved in the Armenian church. And all along, if you look at it, I mean, and I think I've even gone on record here on The Next Step, but I know that in the early part of my career as a priest, and I use that word intentionally, you know that I've talked about it as a ministry and a calling, but at this point, let me use that word career. In my early career as a priest, I would get people who would challenge me and say that your church is run by a particular political party. And I would always fight against them. Fight in the sense that I'd open up my files. I'd say, here, go ahead. Come into my office and I would challenge you. Find me one directive that has been sent to me by a political party. Now, when I say political parties, I should put an addendum to that, right? I'm not talking about Republican and Democrats, and I don't want to get into the Armenian political parties, because these parties started off in a defense of Armenia against Turks. Later on, they prompted so much infighting among themselves that I just really, at this point, do not want to give any more airtime to it, except to make this point that I would go out there and I would say, hey, take a look. Now, today, in today's news, this was interesting. The Catholicos of all Armenians, His Holiness Karakin II, is in New York. And there in New York, for the first time, the Supreme Council of the Armenian Church. Now, remember that the Armenian Church goes under this idea that it has a structure that's based on not only clerics, but also laity. And so there is a Supreme Ecumenical Council made up of bishops, not clergy, but but not necessarily all ranks of clergy, particularly the rank of bishops, and by a few members of the laity. And you look at this and you find out that His Holiness was in New York for a couple reasons, one of which was to consecrate the new St. Nerses Seminary. And by that, I'm assuming that he's consecrating the chapel there. But he was also there because, for the first time, this Supreme Spiritual Council was meeting outside of Holy Etchmiadzin, and they were meeting in New York. And it gives an opportunity. I love the idea because it gives an opportunity for members of the council to really understand the church in a different light outside of Etchmiadzin, because many of the members are from Etchmiadzin. But also, I was very surprised to see that sitting with that council was a member of one of the Armenian benevolent organizations that was not only member, but the president of it. And so it got me to thinking and reflecting about, well, what I had just been through, going back home, going back and remembering what our church had gone through here in America, the divisions, an ugly history that had divided our people and still divides our people. I mean, you still, there are strongholds, there are areas in which people will not cross those divisions. Well, right here in Pasadena, where I'm recording today, right here in Pasadena, this is a true story because I lived it. I was the pastor of the large St. Gregory Armenian Church community. And word came to us that they were opening an Armenian church right across the street. Yeah, in the shadow of St. Gregory Armenian Church. And I wrote to here in America, we get away with these titles that we have, primate, prelate. In Armenian, you can't pull that off. It's arachnort. But in the English language, we have two convenient words. So during the division in the Armenian church, the church leadership was able to find the vocabulary by which to define that division and said, okay, this person is going to be a primate, this person's going to be a prelate. So I wrote to the prelate and I said that, please don't open a church across from this one. And I even made the offer in this letter. I said, listen, why don't you open it 2-3 miles away and I will help you. I will help you to build and organize and do the work for you, because then at least we could tell people that, hey, look, our community is so big, we need 2 churches, and we have a few. One here, one is here, and one is 3-4 miles away, and that's how big our city is, with so many Armenian Orthodox Christians that we need these churches. But what? When you put one a stone's throw away on the other side of the street? What are you saying? You're saying that we don't really believe in the church. We're saying that we can't get the spiritual satisfaction from one church, so we need to establish a second one. And tragically, this has happened not only here in Pasadena, but in many communities. And so when I saw this picture this morning of the Catholicos in New York with a member of the Benevolent Union, his the president sitting next to him, and it just got me to thinking, are we inviting again what happened in the past? We need to make sure, and this is very, very important, we need to make sure that the people who are running the church are people who have the basic understanding that this is Christ's body. And if we don't have that understanding, guess what? We don't have the church. It's the same thing as with the sacraments. I get asked this all the time. Can I get married to a non-Christian in the church? And I say no. And they say, well, they're good people. And I, you know, 35 years I've been a priest. I've gone through this so many times. Somebody will come up, well, I met so-and-so. He or she is Jewish. He or she is Muslim. And very, very nice people. You know what? Their parents are like ours. They're very traditional. They like those things. And we want to get married in the church. And I say, no. And they look at me. And it's not because our religion is better than yours. It's not because that I'm looking down my nose at them. No, it's just a straight logical issue. Marriage is union in Christ. So you've got to believe in Christ so that there can be a union in Christ. If one of the partners does not believe in that Christ, you can't have a union in Christ. So it's purely logical. It's not judgmental. Purely logical. That's why you can't get married in the Armenian church. That's why baptism is the entry point to the sacraments. You get baptized, you enter the Christian church, the community of believers. And so once you are baptized, it opens the doors to the other sacraments. And this has nothing to do with ethnicity too. Let's say, you know, can you marry us to this person? This person is of this ethnic. Last summer I did a marriage of an Armenian girl with a Japanese fella. He said, well, he's Japanese. And I said, and what's the problem here? And does he believe in Christ? Yes. He's a Christian. I said, yeah. And he says he grew up in the Catholic Church and is a practicing Catholic. I said, okay. Is there a problem? But because of the ethnicity and especially because of the pronounced differences in appearance, people got really, really stressed out about that. No, it's not. That's not the issue of stress. Stress is, what is your faith? Do you believe in Christ? And so too, when we get to the higher levels where we're sitting down, and especially with the tragedies that we've endured, and while those tragedies are still real and have separated and divided people, we've got to be careful in who we put and enter into the churches. And we've got to be vigilant in being able to call them out on these points. I'll see what I could do as far as getting some news articles. This just hit me this morning with a friend who dropped me a line about this, but it is concerning to say the least, and I wanted to share that with you. We're going to come back after today's song with some thoughts about what's going on in the world. I told you about social ethics. Let's talk about that. Here is today's song of the day. I hope you enjoy it.
Kalte lusna keil, mekin aes du te gark gam seil. Schepa aus dem Buch te heiten und zerne poch, as da na des nun ne dick am Null beloch. Batanier hima arten hasun, han ha chort mi on asun. Und man gut zerne kores di haschwin, du darz an min dat amol po zain. Ես դիտոր դես ամպերատար, տեսա ինչպես դու կամաց կամաց, դարձար հրեշ մի անաստված, դատարկության շեմինը չոքած. Մարդիկ պնդում են թե դարձել ես վանական, քեզ ակշնորելով հեռավոր են Մենաստան, բայց դու ձերքիդ գիթառու խարազան, երգում ես դու հայոյում լիապեդան. Papits aveli tund katolik, fundamentalist kam fan türkist, neofaschist kam usaktsakan, iskakan molada chnataria. Iskias ditot es amperatar, tesa ichpes to kamats kamats, dasa halesh mi anas vas, tatar kutsyan shem mine chokas. Iskias ditot es amperatar, tesa ichpes du kamats kamats, dasa halesh mi anas vas, tatar kutsyan shem mine chokas. Ես ամպերատար, տեսա ինչպես դու կամաց կամաց, դարձար հրեշ մի անաստված, դատարկության շեմին չոքած. Իսկ ես դիտորդ ես ամպերատար, տեսա ինչպես դու կամաց կամաց, դարձար հրեշ մի անաստված, դատարկության շեմին չոքած.
Yes, you guessed it. Gor Mkhitaryan. Who else? Beautiful music like that. Who else would you expect off of his Passport album called Observer, of an autobiographical nature, I'm sure. He was flying away with those words, but interesting words, interesting lyrics. If you get a chance, slow it down a bit. Listen to what he's saying in there. It's about an observer of what's going on in the world. And that's where we're leading today. Anyway, that is off of the Passport album. It is newly released. It just came out last May. And it is an album that we're very proud of. We did in collaboration with In His Shoes. And there will be a link on today's show notes, not only to that album, but all the wonderful music that Gor Mkhitaryan puts out. He should be on his way back, or he is back from Armenia, where he did the Passport concert, and he had a chance to play with his original band, Hayeli. And Hayeli. And anyway, I'll see if I can put some kind of links together. I'm excited to talk to him. I hope I could do that in the next couple of days. But Gor Mkhitaryan, name of the song, Observer, off of the Passport album. Do check it out. Well, just in case you had not heard, or the remote possibility that somehow it hadn't hit your attention yet, in just a few days, we are going to be electing the new president of the United States. Yes, it is election day next Tuesday, the first Tuesday after the first Monday of the month. That's the way it's written. But, of course, that translates to November 8th. That's next Tuesday. We have an election, and it is a wild election here. It is pitting two people that are just relatively unliked. And I guess as we're getting closer and closer, people have to make up their minds. So now they're getting to be more liked, I guess. I guess that's how it works. I'm finding it very difficult. I'm in a very difficult position because the value of that vote, we always talk about. Do you remember a few years ago when we were seeing the Arab Spring, and we saw communities, we saw countries that were just celebrating the idea of self-determination? And I love that idea. To me, that's a spiritual concept, self-determination. It is diametrically opposed to the idea of destiny, okay? I reject destiny. Destiny is the idea that it's already written out and all you have to do is just breathe. Your heart has to just pump enough so you can breathe and everything else is spelled out. Well, guess what? If you follow that, then there's no personal responsibility. And you come up with all kinds of difficulties then, right? Because if somebody commits a crime, they say, well, that is my destiny. I was meant to do that. I was meant to go kill somebody. I was meant to go and rob someplace. Destiny. Destiny is also connected with the idea that it's already written out. Well, you can't avoid it. So if today you're going to get into an accident, and you say, well, I happen to know what destiny has in store for me. I know that today at noon, I'm going to be in an accident. A car will hit me. And you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to avoid any travel today. In fact, I will take precautions and I will sit in my bed on the second story of my house just to avoid the possibility of an accident at 12 noon. Well, destiny says if it was meant to be, then that car will come running through your attic, your ceiling, your door, your window, your wall, and it will hit you. Thus, destiny will be completed. You were supposed to be in an accident at 12 noon. Okay, there it is. You tried to avoid it. You can't avoid it. Destiny says that's what will happen. Well, I reject that. I hope you do too. It's, again, we go back to logic. You know, do you want to check your brain in at the door? No, you've been created in the image of God, means you have that potential. It means you can create. It means that you are responsible. It means that, well, self-determination. You can determine your being. You can determine who you are. Otherwise, where is responsibility, right? I'm not a robot. I haven't been programmed. No, I have a brain. God has given me a soul, has given me the reasoning powers, and he's given me all of this, and I make up my mind. Good or bad, I make up my mind. You know, when computers first came out, people were just scared silly. Like, what are these? And people would think how wild these things are because they could do these complex mathematical equations. And all of a sudden people started thinking, well, are these things going to take over? Will they be able to compete with human mind? Well, right now, think about it. What they're doing, artificial intelligence, it's learning the process of learning. But back in the early days, there was this discussion. And at that point, people made this point, and this is very important to remember, that computers are basically dumb machines. They interpret ones and zeros. They're binary. They take these codes and they create something. Beautiful pictures, beautiful music. They can create art now, right? Moving forward. But it began with somebody programming them. And so at the end of the day, they will never be smarter than the person that programmed them. Yes, true, they're going to be compiling more information and they have the ability to process all of that. But at the fundamental level, you've got to understand that is somebody who programmed that. And it's the same way with human beings. You have a set of tools by which you make decisions every day of your life, whether as a parent, whether as a spouse, as a child, whether you are on the work circuit, whether you're in the school, wherever you are, you're confronted with a multitude of decisions that you have to make. And you make those decisions based on the tools that you have. And those tools include your upbringing, they include your religious values, they include your non-religious values, they include the fun that you want to have as well. And sometimes we make those decisions, we're happy with them, sometimes we're not happy with those decisions. But that is part of the human condition. We have the right to self-determination, and therefore we have to live with what we have determined. And so it is here in life, today, when we are deciding on a president. Unfortunately, we've put too much power in that person of the president to the point that we start thinking that this is the person who's going to make the decisions. No, ultimately, we have to be the ones who make those decisions and live with them. That's why that vote is sacred to me. That vote is sacred. When the Arab Spring happened, we applauded. Remember those pictures of the people out there with the purple fingers because they marked their ballots? That is a sacred right that you have to determine your future. Now, as I shared with you a few minutes ago, when I was studying for the priesthood, actually there were no Orthodox seminaries near to the Los Angeles area. There was really nothing. St. Vladimir's was just up and coming back east. And so the primate at that time had asked me to go to Claremont Theological Seminary, which was basically Methodist. And there I got a good foundation for Methodist theology, which did not jive with me. I couldn't reconcile with it. The Protestant extremism was a little bit too much, especially at the end of the 70s. And I appealed to my primate to put me in school elsewhere. And we found a program at the University of Southern California, USC, where I'd done my undergraduate work. It was called a program, the religion department, late 70s. Okay, you got to remember that. Okay, they'd gotten rid of the religion department and it went under the new name, social ethics. So I got my degree in social ethics. And basically, it's those decisions, the ethical choices that we have to come up with. The ethics of living. Now, you look at what's going on. I'm going to just pull out, you know, we get tons of mailers. I don't know how it is in some of your other countries where you have election processes. But here, they flood our mailboxes. Yes, the traditional mailboxes as well as electronic. But very interesting, the images that they use. And in particular, there's one race for, let's see, what is this for? This is for Senate. Yeah, I believe so. So, it's an interesting, it's two candidates, but the coloring, you got to see this. So one of the candidates, his coloring is basically the coloring of a corpse. You know, if you've been to enough funerals, which I have, you see dead bodies and they're colored in this color. It's a very odd color. And, of course, the candidate that they want you to vote for, he's colored with a nice tan. But here's the interesting. It says, who shares your values? Now listen. A woman's right to choose. Candidate A supports a woman's right to choose and is endorsed by Planned Parenthood. B strongly opposes a woman's right to choose. Candidate A opposes Donald Trump and will be voting for the Democratic nominee. Doesn't say for Hillary, just the Democratic. I mean, the wording is incredible. You know, they don't want to associate with the nominee, but they say the nominee, not the name of the person. But it says, this one says, has pledged to vote for Donald Trump, the negative guy. Marriage equality, strongly supports marriage equality and is endorsed by Stonewall Democratic Club and Equality California. Negative person, has a long record of opposing marriage equality. $15 an hour minimum wage, strongly supports raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. The other person voted against raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And finally, the last issue is reducing gun violence. A record of supporting common sense gun laws to protect our communities. The opposition opposes sensible gun measures and is endorsed by the NRA, the National Rifle Association. Okay. Each one of these issues, of course, has ramifications and impacts us, and we make our decision based on who we are, with all the tools that have been given to us, our upbringing, our religious background, everything that I said a few minutes ago, they go into play at that moment, who we are, and that determines how we vote. And the ethics of that vote comes into play when we have to live with the consequences, right? Because at the end of the day, you have to feel comfortable, but you also have to be willing to take the responsibility for the way you voted. Now, what we're seeing all around the world is basically this idea of populism, right? We saw it with the Brexit vote in the United Kingdom, and we're seeing it here in America with a candidate such as a Donald Trump. It's coming down to some very basic solutions, to some very complex problems. And the reason why I say those tools that we have are so important in answering it, that's what makes these decisions complex problems. When you look at a candidate like Donald Trump and what he's saying, his appeal, why is it appealing? Well, it's a very simple answer, okay? Basically, you work hard, your money's taken away from you from taxes, and guess who's enjoying those taxes? People that, you know, don't belong in the system. So I have a solution. We get rid of those people and we lower your taxes and you have a great life. Well, it's not that easy and you know it. Everybody knows it's not that easy. You know that, like it or not, America is the superpower. America pumps billions of dollars of trade, billions of dollars of assistance into different countries. You have alliances across the Atlantic. You have alliances throughout the world. You have trade relationships. And these things have to be accounted for. It's not just a question of, well, we don't like you, so we're going to close the door. We're going to build up walls. This is where social ethics gets into it, right? Is it ethical to do that? Because it's not just the life of your people, but there's the lives of others. You're touching, you're influencing the lives of so many other people. And this is why the call to end wars is so important. And it has been important throughout my ministry because it is a direct hit upon the basic core ethical values of humanity. Not just a particular group of people, a particular religion, but the ethics of humanity is built on the sanctity of that human life. Well, how do you measure that human life? That's the next question, right? So we are okay with war, taking of human life on a battlefield, but we have issues with abortion, right? The fetus, the unborn human being. Is it a human being? There's question about that. And there's debate. People will argue about this. Meanwhile, capital punishment goes its way. People are killed in the name of the state. You cannot kill as an individual, but the state can kill a person. whether it's through war or capital punishment. Now, these are issues. These are ethical issues. And they're not easy issues. That's what I want to get to today. The idea that an America can come up with a candidate such as a Donald Trump tells you that people are looking for those simple answers. That Great Britain went through the Brexit vote. That we're seeing this populist movement throughout the world in different areas is proof that people are looking for those simple, simple answers. And this is really one of those difficult cases for me to argue regarding Armadoxy. Because what I'm going to tell you right now is it's not always black and white. It's not always as easy as a yes or no. And this is why the Armadoxy tradition is to take it in, to struggle with those questions, those social ethics, with prayer, to struggle with them with fasting, with contemplation, with meditation, to understand yourself as a complex human being, as complex as every other human being, and therefore this world is a complex place. And in that complexity, to find the presence of God is a difficult one. And so we give you the tools, whether it's prayer, whether it's fasting, whether it's meditation, contemplation, or whether it's just a talk. I mean, just as much as Armadoxy is about all that, this show is a part of Armadoxy. The emails that I get, people that send me emails tell me, you know, thank you. You got us to think in this way. Sometimes it's not about just saying this is the answer. Go out and vote this way. It's about what do you come to terms with? How do you answer? At the end of the day, you're going to have to stand in front of your Creator and give an accounting. Some of the things that we do in life don't turn out the way we want to. How do we deal with that? And how do we deal with it on the big scale? When we have to come up and vote for somebody who we don't feel comfortable with. And you realize that sometimes you have to give a vote. And I'm struggling with that. Next Tuesday, I have to tell you honestly, I don't know if I can vote for either of these candidates. Because both of them have issues that I have issues with. And then I come to terms with, well, what I shared with you last week. I mean, it's also stuff that we are learning more because we have access. I mean, polls right now show that Hillary is winning Donald Trump. Doesn't mean a thing, polls. As people will remind you that, you know, the only real poll that matters is the one that's taken on Election Day. Case in point. I'm sure if you've missed it, it's in every history book that's been in school. It's a picture of President Truman holding up a newspaper that says Dewey wins. Dewey was his opponent in the election of 1946, was it, or 48? Right after the World War. Okay? President Truman won the election, despite what pollsters had said would be his opponent would win. In fact, so much had they said it that one of the newspapers had printed a headline that says, Dewey wins. And Truman is holding up that newspaper. It's so iconic, that picture. I'm sure it's somewhere. I'll dig up a link and make sure it's on the show notes. It's a beautiful picture. But it tells you that, you know, polls are wrong. And it's very possible today. I don't go by those polls. What I go by is, how can we in good conscience elect either one of these people? And it's a difficult decision. And so I leave you. You know, last time, 8 years ago, I shared with you, if you feel like digging up those archives, it was a very emotional time for us. This time, it's a difficult one for us. I think we're in a world where people want those quick answers. They want that quick solution. And so too with religion. They want a quick fix. They want to know that their God is in charge and is in control. And God is going to swoop down like a Superman and take care of everything. And you and I know that that is not what faith is about. You and I know that that's not what love is about. If you want a God that punishes the bad people, and rewards the good people. Well, get ready. Next month, it's Christmas, and Santa Claus is coming. He knows if you've been naughty or nice. That's not what God is about. And Armadoxy is a reflection of who that God is. It's the all-knowing and all-present love that is all around us. Now, how do we implement, how do we exercise that love? That's our decision. That's in our lap. That's the ball being thrown over to our side of the court. And the answer we give will have its ramifications, whether we win that game or we don't. And so my prayers are for all of you who are participating in the election, for all of you that are outside of the area, that you pray with us. It's an important decision. And it's a decision that will be made one way or another. We're going to live with it. And may we find the strength to live with it, would be the way that I would say how I can end today. Not very happy about it, but it is where I am today. Let Susie make her announcements. I'm going to come back with some good announcements about what's going on here at In Issues. Here's Susie.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you to all of you for your wonderful thoughts, prayers that go a long way in continuing this show, as well as your donations. Do be generous in your giving, because you'll find out that Armadoxy right now is like, it's wild, and it is spreading. I'm very excited about the things that are happening, especially I want to draw your attention to two big dates that are coming up. One is March 3rd. It's a three-day conference. That's 3 days on the third month, beginning on the third day of the third month. 333, remember it that way, okay? Mark it on your calendars. This week we should have some preliminary information about it, but you can do a sneak peek by looking at the website that's attached to our that's referenced in today's show notes. Please plan on being there in Burbank with your families. It's going to be a great event. It's the conference Embracing Your Faith, and it has as its draw piece, it's called Reclaim. Have you lost something? It's time to reclaim it. Yeah, I like that. That's coming up on March 3rd. Also put on your calendars July 7th, 2017. That's 7-7-17. We'll be having the decennial conference on forgiveness coming up. And I think we have the location settled. Just want to talk to one other person. I was very excited. I think we found it. And I'll give you a hint. I found it last weekend. So that's coming up. And all the wonderful things you'll see on In His Shoes. God has been leading us in new directions. He's blessed us with so many blessings, including your friendship, including your love and support. I'm very honored, humbled, and appreciative. Thank you very much. God bless you all. All right. I want to call it a day. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. Please join us at inissues.org as well as epostle.net, as well as on Facebook pages. We're just about everywhere you can look. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Follow us on Twitter. Hey, listen, on behalf of our producer, Susie, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Vazgen, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off power! Top limits.